Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Well, welcome to Rated G Radio, everybody. I am your host, Garrett Miller, and of course, for the next hour, we are going to have can you hear that? I've got an airplane that just decided to fly overhead right as the show started tonight. We're going to have a great show tonight, and we're going to have author Dave Talbot on the line talking about his book, The Cabin, and the great story that goes behind that. We're going to gush with him as long as he'll entertain us on the show tonight, and we'll be talking about music, a opportunity to get some HCRI credits if you're involved in the human resources community down here in Orange County on September 9th, and so much more. But without further ado, because our guest is here tonight, I want to welcome Dave Talbot to the line. Dave, thank you for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Garrett, for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, so there's like the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon, as they say, and I've known Dave Talbot for over 30 years, and in all of my years of doing different types of service work around the country, Dave consistently ranks as one of the top people that I've ever had the privilege of working for. And he served as Oregon State Parks Director, so we're going to talk about that. But I want to first start out our time with him by saying, number one, welcome to the show. But there's one thing that you and I exchanged emails on a while back, and it still rings true to this day. I remember one time you and I are walking out to the parking lot after work or during lunch or something like that, and we were talking about continuing my education, and one of the things says, Garrett, you're always going to be learning. Your education doesn't just stop because you finished a class, something to that effect. And those were probably just easy words for you to say because, just conversation of the day, but there are words that stuck with me until this day, and I'm ever so grateful to you for sharing your wisdom with me and just being a great inspiration every time I had a chance to see you, because I know that up at the top sometimes, things are coming down, but you never let it on. So from my level of participating in your group for a very short period of time, you're always a fantastic leader in my book. So just again, thanks for being on the show.
You're entirely welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the recap of how I know Dave. And so I've been blessed to stay in touch with Anita Lanning, who worked for Dave for a number of years. And Anita has become kind of like my second mom or my BFF from afar. And several years ago, she said, I'm in this writer's group, and Dave Talbot, you remember Dave, don't you? I'm like, how could I forget Dave? Well, he comes and he dabbles in writing, and he directs plays, and he does all of this stuff. And I said, our Dave Talbot does all of these things? She goes, yeah, he's really got this amazing gift. So when she said that you had written a book, I said, I've got to get a copy of it. So she obviously put us in touch. So what have you been doing since you left State Parks? I mean, I know it's probably been a day or two, but to me it's just like yesterday.
Yes, just yesterday. Let's see, my first wife died in 91, so I retired very soon after in 92, at which time then I proceeded to do a lot of rafting and fly fishing and just having fun. And then I met and married my dear wife, Lynn. And as it turns out, Lynn was an actor, a wonderful actor. And I got thrown into the world of theater. And that's what got me started writing.
Oh, very good. So now, at your time at State Parks, did you do any type of journaling or memoir writing like you are, I say started, because I really want you to keep going after reading the first book, The Cabin, that you've written. But did you do any type of journaling during that time or in other portions of your life?
Absolutely not. I'm embarrassed to say. I jokingly say, I wrote in bureaucratese. You just say it as quickly and succinctly as you can and make a recommendation and sign it, and off you go, as dear Anita could attest, and I know she's listening. But the answer is no writing whatsoever.
Wow, and I find that so astonishing, because reading the book, The Cabin, that you've written, just points to somebody who has a long history of writing great pieces of work. And I so to hear that, I'm actually kind of stunned. I'm not surprised, but I'm stunned that you haven't written more work. So so what inspired you to tell the story of the cabin?
Simply put, my mother, who was an aspiring writer for as long as I can remember, she died in 1961, and my dad moved to California, San Diego, where my brother Doug was living, and they spent a lot of time together, and my dad died in the mid-80s, and he had kept my mom's writings, and they passed on to brother Doug, and dear Erlene, Doug's wife, was so nice as to save all that stuff and ultimately send it to me. And so I dived into these old journals and writings, and the more I got into it, the more I realized, wow, you know, there might be something here that might be worthwhile to pass on to other people. There's some inspirational things here that are worthwhile, and that's what got me started.
So how did you come up with the idea to write it the way that you put this together? Because can you kind of give the premise of the book? I'd rather have you tell the story than me. It's your book.
Well, that's when you say it's your book, it leads me
your
into
family.
Something that that is so important, and that is it's not really my book. It's my mother's book. It's all the writing, and when I got into it deeply, I ended up with what I describe as a jigsaw puzzle on the table in front of me with half the pieces turned over.
Oh, no.
So I called on my dear good friend, former daughter-in-law, Julie Talbot, who's an editor, to see if she could unscramble this. And so the nice book that you see in front of you is the final jigsaw puzzle that Julie put together that really made it all happen. My son, Eric, undertook the task of all of the technical stuff about maps and graphics and photos. So I handed that off there. And then Lynn has a sister, Dawn, down in Covington, Louisiana, who is a partner in a publishing firm. So I ended up sending the final draft, and then she sent back the book.
It's just amazing. Well, so kudos to your entire family and for the effort they put
into
this.
It is collaboration at its best, and I defy anybody to do anything like this by themselves. It's just not possible.
I think it'd be overwhelming. You know, and the one thing, there's so many things that I just really cherished here. I mean, number one, I love the pictures. We'll get to the writing because obviously that's the meat and potatoes here. But the pictures that you chose for the publication are just, you know, I mean, I see my family in their faces. And the funny thing is, you know, and I see these pictures. And Dave, you know, I was talking to somebody today, and I said, it's so funny, I'm going to have you on the show tonight. And I knew you for 2 years. And in 2 years, I never thought about what was your life like as a little boy? Where did Dave grow up? Where did Dave go to college? You know, and to see these pictures, it brings me back to pictures that I would see of my parents growing up and my mom growing up in, you know, southern, southeastern Oregon
so
as well.
Many people. Garrett, it's I hear this over and over, and for your listening audience, the key date is 1933, in the depth of the horrible recession, and the family was living in Oakland. I was born in August of 1933, so if you do the math, that makes me 81. But I was just born. I had an older brother, Doug, 2 and a half. And my dad came home and announced that he had just lost his job. And he said, but I have an idea. His parents had moved to southern Oregon and had also bought a big chunk of land way back in the wilderness and built this one-room cabin. This was 12 by 14. If you'll mark that off, you'll see that it's not very big at all. And my dad said cabin, and my mother imagined Clark Gable standing in front of the fireplace with a cocktail. And when she got there and she saw it finally, she said, that's not a cabin, that's a doghouse.
Oh,
and so she was a city girl. She didn't know how to boil water, and all of a sudden, here she was plopped in the middle of total wilderness, no water, no toilets, no electricity, nothing, and a brand new baby and on her own. And so that's the guts of the story as I see it.
Well, what I just really found so compelling, and I need to be honest with you, Dave, you know, you were kind enough to send me the book a long time ago, and it sat on top. I put it on top of every other book that I promised all the other authors that I would read. Yours really truly did stay on top, and it just took me forever to get to it. But when I sat down to read it, I sat down a couple of weeks ago, and I had started to read the book, and then I realized something magical was taking place in the first couple of pages. I said, oh, I can't just, like, cruise through this book. I need to sit back and enjoy this like you would a fine dessert or a fine meal and take every word like a carefully chosen bite of your meal and really savor the flavors of the words that your mother picked and that you retold in your portions of the stories as well. But your mother, brilliant, brilliant writer. So descriptive, so magical in everything that she said, it really took me back. I could see living in southwestern Oregon in 1933, and the closest equivalent that I could come to that would be going to stay with my Uncle Darrell in Lapine, Oregon in the early 70s. But even that cabin was probably, like, you know, high-end compared to what you're back at, you know, because we had the outhouse and we had the pump well for the water. But it just brought back a lot of memories for me, and I love everything that your mother was able to keep. I'm surprised that, you know, she kept such great records. Did she write up until the time she passed?
She did. I have 9 of her daily journals. Starts at 1935. The 1934 one is missing, but I have 1935, which is, well, probably almost 200 pages of description.
Wow.
Of her daily life, much of which is very mundane, but some of which is absolutely beautiful. She describes her wonderful husband, Doug, my dad, the difference between them when she looked out the window and looked at the beautiful trees, and it just warmed her heart, and she thought about nature and all that. And when he looked out the window, he saw board feet and logged.
So he's the businessman, and, you know, she's the romantic. Okay.
Well, he was the deal was he was going to live off, they were going to live off the land. He would log in the summer, mm-hmm. and in the winter he would mine for gold. There was gold in them, our hills, and they got gold, and his parents had promised them the wonderful sum of $20 a month to help them live, and that's all they had.
Wow. From, because you were there right as an infant, though, what are your first memories of growing up in Oregon?
Okay, so you have to fast forward to 1943. Prior to that, we're living in San Francisco up on Hyde Street, and Dad decides it's time to get out of San Francisco. It was during the war, and we moved to Grants Pass, where his parents were living. And it was absolute paradise to my brother and I because the hills were all around us and there were rivers and creeks with fish in them. And we were happy as anything. And we would then, the cabin was still there. And so in the summertime, Mom and my brother and I would go up to the cabin and just live. And my dad would drive that 30-mile trip twice a day. And we would be in paradise. My brother and I raced around the hills. And went fishing, and, you know, with Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer time.
And so did you have, as a child, you know, because it says that you went to school, and I guess that you never really think about, you know, okay, back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, people had to get to school. How did you make your way to school every day? And did you have, like, snow days, or do you went every, you know, just like a regular
school? Oh, no, yeah. Well, the way that the cabin was situated on the hillside, in the wintertime, at the base of the hill, there was a stream, Pleasant Creek, which is a beautiful little stream. But in the winter, it was kind of, I hate to use the word, raging torrent, but it really was. And so in order to get across it, we would cross on a log and then work our way down to where Dad had parked the car on the county road, which was way down there. And then he would drive us then and drop me off at a little school and take Doug and drop him off and then go on to work. In the afternoon, the school bus with Doug on it would pick me up at my little school and deposit us a mile or two from the cabin, and we would hike in to get home. Sometimes in the dark and off in the winter time, the only way to get anything into the cabin, whether it was kerosene for the lamps or food or mom's books or anything, came in on our backs.
And what I think you must be reading my mind, because I was just going to ask you, how did you get all your supplies up there? But it was a lot of hard work.
Well, it really felt good when we took the packs off. we would almost fall forward from. But we just had to do it, so we did it, and we did it day in and day out. We would take turns breaking the snow. You know, if you've ever done that, with the guy in front with a flashlight, and then we'd switch off, and we'd just get there and do it, and we'd come around the corner, and there'd be the lights on in the cabin and the smoke coming out of the chimney, and, oh, boy, that was just heaven.
Well, your mom tells several stories about, learning how to wash clothes and how to cook. Do you have a favorite passage in the book that just really touches your heart or brings back special memories for you?
Oh, so many of them, Garrett. The one that tickles me the most is the little short passage about going fishing with my dad on spring day and up on Pleasant Creek, and we were fishing a place we called Three Pools, which is a beautiful spot with three little cascading pools. And at that time of year, it was spring, the wood ticks were out. And I don't know, your listeners probably don't know anything about ticks, but they're nasty little bugs that like to bore into deer or dogs or people if they can and suck out a little fluid called blood. And so we would stop periodically and check each other for ticks. And on this particular morning, my dad was standing up on the rock shelf above, fishing from above, and my brother Doug and I were below. And all of a sudden, my dad realizes that he has a tick stuck in the one of his buttocks. And so, of course, he couldn't ask for Doug and I to come and help. He had to do it himself, and he had to drop his drawers with the sun shining brightly on his white little fanny, unscrewing this tick, and my brother and I trying to not look at each other for fear we'd laugh and fall in and get into trouble. But I'll never forget that, my staid dear father up there unscrewing a tick with the sun shining on his white butt.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the one that makes me – there are lots of those like that that amuse me and make I can remember so well. And when my brother and I – talk on the phone, which is very often why we will get into these stories, and he'll remember one that I hadn't, and I will remember one that he hadn't, and we just laugh ourselves silly.
Well, I think one of the favorite stories that I can, and the nice thing about your book is that it's, 116 pages long. Easy reading, but it's, again, savoring reading. It's a book that you want to just take the time to really enjoy. And I think probably one of my favorite stories is about the time that your mother got a book called San Francisco, A Pageant by Charles Caldwell Dobie. And she'd sent off, I think, for a copy of that. Can you tell us how that played out for her?
Oh, I can't remember. Gosh, you got me, Garrett.
She sent him like a fan letter, I think.
I've read that recently in her journals. He sends her a copy. A signed copy with a lovely note. What story are you reminding me
I
forget?
No. I think that's exactly the story.
She loved San Francisco.
Really, yeah.
She loved that city more than life itself. She longed for San Francisco constantly and wrote many. I have about over 100 of her poems, many of which are about San Francisco. So somehow it was very important to her. And to get that book from him here up in the wilderness, you know, all she, all that kept her alive was reading and writing. And of course she had, can you imagine all the diapers And
that
had to be washed, and she had to heat the water over a stove and then scrub. She had a bench outside. She would take it out there and put the soap in, do all the diapers and rinse them out, and then rinse them and then hang them. If it was, if they would hang inside, if it was inclement outside or outside, but she had, you can imagine how, what a difficult thing that would be. Have you ever seen a washboard? You know, the
kind
that you would,
yeah,
that's what she used to scrub. And so those were the hard days, and she had to learn how to cook and bake bread and cookies and feed the family, which she did. She had a hunger for socializing. She loved people, and she would walk 5 miles to get the mail and visit with the neighbors, the closest neighbors, the Hardens down the mountain. Or there were two old Alaskan sourdoughs who lived on a little, what we called a flat, down the hill from us. They had been partners in the gold mines up in Alaska, and they both had the first name, Charles. So she referred to them as the Charlies. And she would go down and listen to them still tell stories about Klondike Kate and all of the strange and remarkable, amazing things that happened up there. But she reached out constantly to be with people, because she found the mountains so quiet and alone. It just haunted her. So she was constantly finding some excuse to get out and to talk to people.
Well, and I think that one of the stories that you tell in the book is that after being in the mountains for a period of time, she had gone back to San Francisco and was just shocked at the noise of the city and the hustle and the bustle and how superficial so many of the people that she once held so near and dear to her were about throwing a dinner party for 30 or 40 people. And she's like, well, you need to come out to the mountains and see what it's like to cook for 30 or 40 people. You know, just the stories you tell, you know, it was so relatable that it just spoke to me. So number one, thank you for that. As a writer, and so now I'm going to think of you as Dave Talbot, the writer, not Dave Talbot as the longest serving state parks director in the country for 30 years, but as Dave Talbot, the writer, what else have you been working on, or are you working on anything else right now?
I have an idea that I'm working on. As I mentioned earlier, I have all of her journals, daily journals, with her, what she says every day. Mm-hmm. I have over 100 of her poems, and then I have a quite elaborate bunch of photographs. So I'm thinking of trying to match those together. A daily journal about some event, about the weather or about people or something, and then try and match that with one of her poems and maybe a picture or two, and then carry this throughout and see. I have no idea how it would work, but that's the project I'm working on now. And I'm about halfway there.
Okay.
And I'm getting close to starting to take it and put it in hands of people and say, do you think this has any merit?
Well, if the poems are anything like the writing that you've shared in the book, The Cabin, and for everybody, if you're listening tonight and you're watching from your computer, there is a link on the little show description there. If you click it, you'll actually go to Amazon.com and you can buy Dave's book tonight. Just click it and you can buy it right now. But if it's anything like any of the other writings that your mother has shared in the book here, it is something I think that must be shared. You can't, I was like, you can't keep this from us, Dave. You have to share this.
But thank you, Garrett. My mother thanks you. That is the most wonderful feeling I have of knowing how she longed to be a writer. She just hungered for it, and it never came to be. And now, all of a sudden, here we are talking about what really is her story.
Her story.
And it just makes me feel really good.
But do you want to kind of give away a little bit more of what ended up happening towards the end of the book that took you back more towards the city? Or should people go and buy your book?
Okay. It's 1933. Dad loses his job, and we go to Oregon and live in a doghouse. And He finally gets a job late 1935. We move back to San Francisco, from San Francisco to Oakland, and from Oakland back to San Francisco. 1943, Dad says, we're going to Oregon, and off we go to the little town of Grants Pass. Everything is wonderful. Life is good. All of a sudden, Mother is ill. She goes to the hospital. It turns out that she has a miscarriage, and they discover ovarian cancer.
Mm.
So that's all very bad. My dad gathers my brother and I, and he sits us down. He says, boys, we're really in debt because we didn't have any insurance. We're really in debt. How about moving up to the cabin for a while, and I'll see if I can get us out of debt? Of course, my brother and I thought that's the best idea we'd ever heard of. We couldn't, you know, when do we leave?
Right.
So off we go. I'm in the sixth grade, and Doug, brother Doug, is in the ninth grade. This is in 1944. And so off we go, and we live up there, and we're hiking in and out through the snow and the all of the terrible, crazy things. But we're having fun in the meantime. And my mother is trying to recover, but she's doing everything she'd always done before, doing all the cooking and washing. And in the late fall of after, yeah, the war had just ended, late fall of 45, we were down working on the road, and we looked up, and here came Mom down the hill hobbling with white bandage with blood all over it on her ankle. And she, when we got to her, she said, Rattler. Where we lived was full of rattlesnakes, as simply put. They were everywhere. We had to really be careful. Well, she got one in the ankle. So Dad took her into the hospital, and shortly thereafter, Dad sat my brother and I down and said, boys, I think we're going to be moving back to town. So that's when we moved back to Grants Pass in the fall of 1945, where I then went to high school and was active in unactive in scholarship and very active in athletics. And that's a terrible story unto itself. But anyway, I was fortunate. I was offered a track scholarship at the University of Oregon for now famed Bill Bowerman, the guy who created Nike. So off to the university I went, and I discovered something that I'd always kind of known, and that was that play, the very business, the very act of having fun and playing was healthy. And just as the idea of parks and recreation was just catching hold in America, they started a program at the university, and so I joined that program and was one of the first graduates in 1956, and
wow.
Shortly, at which time then I got married, and then I ended up as director of Parks and Recreation for my hometown, Grants Pass, for a couple of years, and then I was offered a position with State Parks, the purpose of which was to help local cities and counties get their park systems going, and I had a wonderful time traveling Oregon. And I went back and I got my master's degree just at the time the head guy quit for a job somewhere in the East. I didn't apply, thinking that my technical knowledge wasn't sufficient, but I got a call one morning from the highway engineer who was supervised parks in those days, saying that he saw that I hadn't applied, and I said, yes, I didn't think I was qualified. And he said, what do you mean? And so I told him, he says, oh, that's baloney. We have engineers and foresters and all these people around. We're just looking for somebody who can run it. And I thought, oh, my Lord. And so I applied, and I was appointed in Christmas of 64. And then the fun began. I couldn't have had a more interesting and challenging career. The public was so ready for protecting the beaches and the rivers and historic sites, and the governors, we were always high on their priority list, and so it was kind of a wonderful time for almost 30 years.
And just spectacular. Hey, Dave, we actually have, it looks like, a caller who would like to chime in and ask you a question tonight. Do you mind if we bring a caller
sure.
on? Okay, cool.
Oh, no, by all means.
Okay, caller, you're on the air with legendary Dave Talbot.
All right, I recognize that voice. Excuse me, this is Anita. How you doing, Dave? You're sounding
Hi, Anita.
Great. This is so exciting. I love this. And Garrett, what an interview. Man, you should go pro.
And Anita, we need to get together. We're close by, and let's do it.
Yes, well, I'm waiting for life to quit getting in my way, and I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Dave.
We're not going to put up with that.
Oh, okay. I'm busting.
Life is never going to cooperate. So let's just you and I and George and Lynn get together.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you, sir.
That will be
a highlight of my life, let me tell you. Dave, I know that you've been very successful. This book is wonderful, but you've also been a very successful playwright. And, I know about your trips up to Alaska and and your screenplays and the classes you've taken and to write for movies and one thing and another. And I have read the scripts for a couple of movies that you've worked on. So why don't you talk a bit about that?
This, Anita. After all these years, I've avoided it like the plague. I decided I would try my hand at poetry, which is very difficult for me because my metaphor button is really broken. But I've joined a group in Rancho Mirage, California, Dear Dorothea, the poet laureate of Rancho Mirage, California, has been so nice to me and helped me through the. So I'm struggling to try my hand at poetry just so that I can someday when I greet my mother I can say, well, I at least tried, Mom.
I'm beginning to see where you got all your writing talent.
I don't know if you can pass that on genetically or not. I've had fun with screenwriting too, and I don't know if you'll ever see a movie or not, but I'm kind of close. I'm hoping I can get one through.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that one? Anita, don't go anywhere. Okay. Hang on. But as far as how did you decide that you wanted to start writing a screenplay? Because in between you and me and a lamppost, I just started writing a sitcom pilot about 2 weeks ago. So I'm asking now from a fan standpoint.
I like playwriting so much. It's so much fun, and it is so real. It's the way people really talk. When you look at a narrative script. The University of California, Berkeley, had an outpost at Palm Desert. So I went out there and I wanted to sign up for playwriting. They said, we don't have playwriting, but we have screenwriting. And I thought, well, what the heck, why not? So I dropped into a class of six or seven being taught by a guy by the name of Stu Krieger, a filmmaker from L.A. And I said, well, what do I do? And he said, you write a movie, dummy. And I said, when? And he said, right now. I said, now? So I did. So it's like so much in my life, it's that business of nobody told me I couldn't, so I did. And I like history so much. I have no trouble finding historical subjects to write screenplays. I have a close friend, Victor Hawkins, who may be listening, and Victor is my partner in crime with this one movie we're working on, and I couldn't get along without him because he has done movies, and the business of screenwriting technically is kind of a pain, and it's not a pain for Victor, so he does it for me, and we're having fun trying to put this thing together.
Awesome. Anita, you must have at least one more follow-up question for Dave before I let you go and ask him my last couple.
I'm so pleased that this has finally happened. I've been looking forward to this. And Dave, thank you for doing it. And Garrett, bless you for being the wonderful person you've been since the first day I met you.
I'm telling you, you rock my world, Anita.
I'm Oh, all right.
I have to add something here for the listeners at the State Park headquarters in Salem. As you came through the door, you were greeted by a person sitting at a desk. And sitting there was this young man by the name of Garrett Miller, with a smile on his face and a happy countenance. And that was the voice on the phone. If you called State Parks, Garrett answered the phone and helped you find out what you needed to know. And he was mentored by Anita, dear Anita. And it was a wonderful time, and he did a great job for us, and we appreciate it both a lot.
Thank you very much for that, but I will tell you, it was 2 years of really learning from, okay, so Mutual Admiration Society is now in session, but it was really 2 years of really being able to learn some very valuable life lessons about how you deal with people, how you treat people, how you be professional. And, you know, because I'm just an 18, 19-year-old kid and don't know anything, and just being able to be around people who were genuinely good people, like you and Anita are, really taught me quite a bit that I still carry on through life to this day. So I appreciate both of you for taking the chance and letting me come to work with you. So thank you very much for that. So there. Okay.
So there, too. Thank you, Garrett. I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of this wonderful interview. Okay.
Very good. Thank you,
Anita.
Talk to you later. Okay, so Dave, so we've talked a little bit about the book of poetry that you're working on, so that is really cool. Let's get to the fun stuff. How's the family, the kids, the grandkids? I hear you might have a new graduate on the way.
My life is so good, Garrett. I've had 20 years of wonderful life with dear Lynn. I could not get along without her. We have fun times. We live here. I'm in Oregon, Bend, Oregon, as we talk. We live here until it gets really cold, and then we go to Palm Desert until it gets really hot, and then we come up here. And we have a lot of fun together. I have a son, Eric, who's an architect in Portland, and he and his wife, Peggy, live in Salem, and they're probably listening, and help a lot. And then have a daughter, Sarah, and her beau, Hans, who live in Munich, Germany, and
wow,
they're be coming over soon. And to top it all, this weekend, this very coming weekend, Eric and I and my grandson, David, we're all going to gather down in Grants Pass, and we're going to hike up and see if we can find the old cabin.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Now, I
you
want to
come?
Take some, yeah, I might just.
Well, just
you
don't
have to take some pictures.
Oh, we will. We will. I am really excited to we haven't been in there since probably 46, and Lord knows if there's anything left, but by golly, we're going to go find out.
You're going to go find out. That is something.
Yes.
That's the perfect follow-up, because when I'm reading the book, and I'm going to give you probably my last analogy here, but it was very much like watching the movie Stand By Me, except it was really Stand By Me and Dave's mom. So you had these two stories
nice
that were coming through, and then, going back, I think just, it's that circle of life, and it's I would love to hear what ends up happening with that. That's very, very cool. Are you on social media? Are you on the Twitter or the Facebook? Or if people want to try to reach out to you, how do people do that?
I'm so sorry to admit that the answer is no. I can barely operate a computer and a smartphone, but I'm learning. But the answer to the question about social media, no, I have not yet taken that step. But who knows? I just might have to do that.
Okay, very good. Well, I for number one, if anybody wants to get a hold of Dave, after the show, if you want to email me at garrett@garrettmiller.com or send me a note on Facebook or the blog talk page, I'll be very glad to put you in contact with Dave. If you have not had the opportunity to go to Amazon and buy Dave's book yet, you must do that tonight. There's a link that's on the show page right now. If you just look at the body of the text saying Dave Talbot's going to be on the show, there's a link on there that you can press that, and it will take you right to Amazon.com. So you don't even have to look it up, and it'll make it that easy for you to buy Dave's book tonight. Dave, I hope when you come down this next winter that you'll let me know, and my schedule is now much more amenable to being able to say, you know what, I'm going to go out there for the day and hang out and have lunch. So if you are headed back down this way, I'd love to hang out with you for a day.
I will do it. I'll come to you.
Oh, you can come to Huntington Beach. I mean, that's going to break my heart.
Sure, why not?
Beach,
it's a good excuse to come over there. So it's a done deal.
Done deal. Well, Dave,
the done deal.
What a huge treat. I'm not kidding. From the bottom of my heart, this is by far the highlight of my year, having you on the show tonight. It's such an honor to hear your voice and be able to read the book and then have you tell the stories tonight. So thank you very, very much.
It's really been fun, Garrett. Thank you so much. And it's good to hear from you and to learn of your success. And it doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, hey, before I let you go, it looks like I've got another caller on here. Do you want to take one more call?
Oh, sure.
Okay, I know. You know, we might as well, right? Welcome, caller, to the show. You're on with Dave Talbot.
Hi there. This is Michelle Talbot. Hi, Uncle Dave.
Hi, Michelle. How nice of you to hook in.
I'm just popping in because I wanted to point your listeners to your website as well. It's thecabinmemoir.com. So you can see an interview with Dave and read more about the book and all of that. So he's got a little website up there that he didn't even really know about.
Oh,
okay,
you're
the cabinmemoir.com.
Michelle's been so nice. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, that way they can see your video and everything.
Well,
oh,
Michelle,
thank you,
awesome.
Michelle. That's sweet of you.
I'm going to go ahead and put that
Craig
on
and girls.
The Facebook page, too. So for anybody who wants to get that link after the show, if they can't write it down right now, you can go to the Facebook fan page for Rated G Radio, and we'll have thecabinmemoirs.com. Is it with an S, Michelle, or just with the cabin memoir?
The cabin memoir, no S.
No S. Okay, that's important to know, because
yes.
It might take you to a completely different place. You'd buy somebody else's book. That would be a bad thing. Cool. Michelle, thank you. It's great to hear your voice.
You're very welcome, and great job, Uncle Dave, and I will be sending the kids the podcast so they can listen to it.
Oh, thanks, Michelle.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Michelle.
Bye-bye.
Dave, we're going to end the show tonight with a song that I think might be appropriate for you. It's called
All Right.
Home by Patrick Allen Casey. He's been a recent guest on the show, and he did a world premiere of this song 3 weeks ago. So I'm going to play this in your honor, and I'm going to have you stay on the line for just a second while everybody else gets to hear this song. We'll be right back.
Oh, place I'll ever know. No matter where I go, I feel like home.
That was Patrick Allen Casey with his song Home, which he did a world premiere with us 3 weeks ago. It's burning up the charts on adult contemporary stations around the country near you. So on the line with us right now is Sonova, who is also a friend of Dave's. And Sonova, you wanted to call in and talk to Dave. Do you want me to see if I can still maybe like get him back on the line?
Well, I'll call him after we're all through.
Okay. So, well, do you have a favorite story about Dave that you can share with the listeners?
Oh, there's so many. But anyway, my husband and Dave and Lynn have spent many, many an hour together just having a wonderful time and enjoying his poetry and reading his book. And, well, you know, we've known him since college days.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, yes, yes, it goes way back. But there's no special more person than David Talbot, let me tell you.
What a great man he is. Oh,
he is. He's just so interesting. Yeah. And his pursuits through life have been so just – it involves so many people and so many different activities. And he's never changed. He never changes. He just is this really interesting, great man. And with that, Garrett, I'll say goodbye, okay?
Oh, bless your heart. Have a great night. Thanks for calling in, Sonova.
Great program. Thanks so much.
Oh,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. So for everybody who's in the Orange County area, I want – oh, and by the way, Michelle, if you are still listening, if you'd give me a call back or send me a note, I think I can't find Dave's website, thecabinmemoir.com, so I'm probably spelling something wrong. But I've done a search on my Verizon, and it's not coming up. So if you can let me know what that would be, I would love to make that correction for you. So if you are in the Orange County area, I rarely do plugs for anything locally, but it seems to be the week for it, folks. There is an HR Leadership Conference with the National Human Resources Association, NHRA, not National Hot Rod Association. It's National Human Resources Association. We're having a leadership conference on September 9th. It's coming up. It's going to be featuring Jackie Freeberg. She is going to be talking about leadership, innovation, and culture. They've also got some guest speakers from Art Elazarov. He's the Vice President of People Strategy at DreamHost.com, and he'll be talking about democracy in the workplace. We've got Tony Enrico, who is a co-author of Championship Selling, A Blueprint for Winning Today's Customer. He's talking impact leadership. And Dan Mulhern is a leadership and organizational development expert, and he's going to be talking on the impact of paired leadership on your business, people, and your bottom line. If you'd like more information about this event, it is going on September 9th. You can go to humanresources.org and look for meetings and events in Orange County. And let's see here, for famous birthdays of the day, since we tend to always give you, you know, something to celebrate. Go get a birthday cake tonight and enjoy it. Well, we're going to have warm wishes going out to George Hamilton, Orange George Hamilton. I don't know if he tans or if he just rubs food dye on his face, but he is 74 today. I think that might be wrong. I think he's older than that at this point. But it says he's 74, so we'll give it to him. That might be his Hollywood age. Hollywood actor who won a Golden Globe Award in 1960 is the most promising male newcomer and starred in the 1971 film Evel Knievel. He also appeared in All the Fine Young Cannibals, 2 Weeks in Another Town, and Your Cheatin' Heart. And after moving to California, he signed a contract with MGM and received various film roles. He played a major role in Where the Boys Are. In family life, George's father was the popular band leader George Spike Hamilton. He was married to Elena Stewart from 72 to 75. He dated Kimberly Blackford from 97 to 99 and had one son with her. And many people have said he resembles Warren Beatty, and George Hamilton, though, is 74 today. Also having birthdays, Casey Affleck, 38-year-old actor, born Caleb Affleck. He is the younger brother of Ben. He portrayed Charlie in Tower Heist and the PI in Gone, Baby, Gone. He's also known for his roles in Good Will Hunting and Ocean's 11. And in 2008, he was also nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his role in The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. That's a title that's way too long for a movie. He attended Columbia University and majored in psychics. I think that should be physics. It looks like it. They wrote it as psychics. There we go. He appeared in Tom Myers in the first two American Pie movies, and he married longtime girlfriend Summer Phoenix in June 2006 after her brother, actor Joaquin Phoenix, introduced them in 2000. Happy birthday, Casey Affleck. And, Michelle, I think I see you on there, so I'm going to get you as the show ends here, so I'll come back to you. So don't hang up. Let's see. We also have... I'm really grasping here for the birthdays today. Normally we have a ton of people I've seen. Yvette Nicole Brown, she's 42. She's an actress who appeared on many TV popular shows like Chuck, House, Boston Legal, and That 70s Show. Before she was famous, she appeared in a music video as well as several commercials before getting into TV and movies. She is on the NBC show Community, playing divorced mother Shirley Bennett. She has an older brother named Paris, and she was on the popular TV series Community with legendary Chevy Chase. Chevy Chase left that show, though. I think Community is now being picked up by Netflix, and everybody is freaking out over that because, you know, they've got a very loyal following. It's just how, you know, TV network stuff kind of happens today. Last birthday of the day that we'll cover today, Mr. Sam J. Jones, 59 years old. He's a movie actor. He is an American who became known for his role in the 1980 hit film Flash Gordon. Is that the guy who played Flash Gordon? Okay. He also has appeared in The A-Team, Code Red, and The Highwayman. Before he became famous, he was a Marine. Thank you for your service. And in trivia, he first acted opposite Bo Derek in the romantic comedy, 10. He married Ramona Lynn Jones in 1982, and the couple had three children together. And along with his appearance in Flash Gordon, he starred with Timothy Dalton. So that is a big happy 59th birthday to Sam Jones. Tomorrow night on Rated G Radio, we're going to welcome you back, and we're going to be talking real estate and what's happening in your section of the country. John Brashear with Keller Williams Real Estate will be joining us tomorrow, and like we do so many times, if you are in a particular region of the country that you have a specific real estate question for, send it to me in advance, and we will have John answer that live on the show, or you can call and test his real estate knowledge just like you can any night of the week at 323-657-1493. And we're going to play one more song here by Margot Ray Cullors. It's her new hit that's in the top 10 on the AC charts right now as well. She was our special guest on the Friday Night Dance Party a couple weeks ago. Hope you enjoy this, and we'll be right back.
I close my eyes and tell myself when I feel judged by someone else that love, love, love begins with me. I dig in deep and must reveal a secret for my heart to heal. No lies, 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 or make believe. But my stones and sticks I pitch them away and get in the way of myself again. And then I say, I'm not afraid, I know how to be brave, 'cause in the best and worst of days, my colors never fade, bitter words can't stain, wash out or strip away, 'cause in a million shades of gray, my colors never fade. Imperfections unravels me in all directions, and it's hard, 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 so hard to breathe.
can't pave my road with good intentions, frightened by my own invention. Oh, when will I believe? So brick by brick, I lay it there and paint up my face for the world again. And then I say, dreams come true in faith when my colors never fade. Right my way to a better day. Never fade away. Fade away. Colors never fade. Bitter words can't say, wash out or strip away. 'Cause in a million shades of gray, my colors never fade. Impossible, they say. The art cannot be played, but my dreams come true in faith when my colors never.
Go a little Margot Ray colors. And for everybody who was patient enough, Michelle, Dave's niece, was kind enough to call back in and during the song gave me the correct link. I like to throw on extra letters apparently to the alphabet. So it is The Cabin Memoir. On the end of memoir, I threw an E on the memoir, so it was no wonder it wasn't coming up. So it's just The Cabin Memoir, no E on memoir.com. The link is now on the Blog Talk chat room. Thank you very much. And I've also put it on the Rated G Radio fan page. Always encourage you to go and like that. If you've enjoyed tonight's broadcast, number one, thank you very much for listening. I sincerely appreciate you every night of the week that you're here. But I do this live Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and it is talk radio at its finest. So if you have someone that you know who has a compelling story or does something really cool, I would love to hear from them. So please put them in touch with me, and we'll get them scheduled accordingly. If you would like to listen to future shows and say, well, I don't know how to get in touch with you, et cetera, on the show tonight, if you're listening on the computer, there's a little follow button, and if you click that, you can follow the show, which means that you'll get either an email or a text message before each show with the correct link. Every show I do, since I do this five nights a week, and it's online, has a specific show link for that particular night. So, for example, after tonight, if you want to go back and listen to Dave's interview, all you'll have to do is click the same link that you used today to go back and listen. So if you want to share the episode with family and friends who might have missed it and love Dave as much as we all do, then forward this over to them, and then they can listen at their leisure, and so on, and so on, and so on. And finally, a big thanks to the fine folks at Blog Talk Radio for keeping Rated G Radio a featured program every time we're live. That means if you just happen to be floating around on the Blog Talk Radio homepage, this show comes up as one of their featured programs five nights a week. So with that, I want to again send a big thanks to Dave Talbot. Go buy his book, The Cabin. It'll be something that you will read over and over and over again and enjoy it probably more every single time. I will be back tomorrow live with John Brashear talking real estate and what it means to you this fall. Call in, tune in, do all of that fun stuff, and I will see you live here on Wednesday night. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.